On today's episode of 23 is the Mic, we recap an unfortunate early exit for the Cubs and the White Sox. The Miami Heat are on their way to an exit as well, and we'll preview week 4 of the NFL season, including the Bears' noon matchup against the Colts. So, let's get into it. Welcome to 23's The Mic. It is Friday, October 2nd, and the Cubs are dead. They unfortunately lost today's early afternoon matchup against the Miami Marlins by a final score of 2-0. Yu Darvish took the L. They were swept in two games. They lost the first game 5-1. They did not look good all series. And all of the focus now shifts to breaking up the core. Will the Cubs pull the trigger this offseason? That is what we need to find out. Now, this issue with the Cubs started in 2018, and it hasn't gotten any better. And everyone's saying, maybe it's just a COVID season. What do you do with Chris Bryant? What do you do with Javi Baez? Trade them, get rid of them, you know? The problem is that Chris Bryant and Javi Baez is coming off probably the worst season of his career, just did not look good at all this season. And maybe it's because he feeds off the fans. Maybe it's because he is a showman. Chris Bryant has just not looked the same ever since he won MVP. He had a shoulder injury in 2017. He had a back injury in 2018. He looked decent last year. He had an oblique and an ankle and a shoulder injury this year and just did not look good at all. His batting average this year was .204. Coming into last weekend, he had 5 RBIs over a 60-game stretch in which he played 34 games. Just not that level. And you don't pay. You don't hand out extensions based on performance from 4 years ago. And that's the toughest pill that us as Cubs fans are going to have to swallow. Chris Bryant was my favorite player back then in the World Series year. He's not the same player, not even close. He started his career off as the Rookie of the Year. Then the next year in 2016, he won the NL MVP and just went complete straight line downhill from there. And that, as a realization, is just incredible. I've never seen such a fall from grace in a player before. Never have I seen that. You have your one-year wonders in the MLB, of course, because it is a lot more unpredictable than other sports. But to see this guy start his career off as Rookie of the Year, he had all the hype in the world before he even started his career. And to see what has come of Chris Bryant now, it's just astonishing. I mean, you just got to take a step back and view it and reflect on it. It's just astonishing to see. Rizzo, Bryant, Baez in the entire series combined to go for combined for a total of 1-for-24. That's not going to get it done between your three star players. Wilson Contreras did decent this series. Ian Happ has been good all year. He's been the one lightning rod. You have Jason Hayward, who's also had a good resurgence here. But what do you do as Theo Epstein in your last year under contract? Reminder, Theo is also... So we have this year, John Lester is going to be a free agent. Next year, KB, Rizzo, Baez, all free agents. But also, Theo Epstein is a free agent next year. And who's to say that he re-signs on with the Cubs? I can't see that happening, to be honest with you. This man went from Boston... He won a World Series with them. He broke their curse to Chicago, broke the curse here. And this man is on top of baseball. This man is already Hall of Fame front office exec. So why would he stay for another rebuild? Because that's exactly what this team needs. The farm system is depleted. The pitching is okay. Do we trade Kyle Hendricks to get some arms, some young arms? Because look at the Marlins. The Marlins are exactly what we wish we were right now. Sandy Alcantara, a young guy. Sixto Sanchez, a young guy. Both started, both destroyed the Cubs. Sixto Sanchez had, I think, 76% of his pitches today were fastballs. The Cubs couldn't hit it. They managed 4 hits off Sixto Sanchez and then also a few walks, and they just could not hit with runners in scoring position. And it's so frustrating that the Cubs continue to lack the hitting. that's necessary for that next level, like we did in 2016. This is the first time in Chicago Cubs history that they've been shut out in a playoff elimination game. You look at yesterday, or not yesterday, the game one against the Marlins on a Wednesday, they put up one run. Against the Rockies, the last time the Cubs were in the playoffs in the wild card in 2018, they put up one run. I was at that game. Against the Dodgers, when they got eliminated in the NLCS in 2017, they put up one run. This is a slew of games. And in this game, the elimination game, they decided that let's do one better than just putting up one run in the last three elimination games that we've played in the postseason. The last three postseason games that we've played, let's put up nothing and get shut out. And it's just abysmal, abysmal on all fronts. I personally don't think you can blow this up right now. I don't think you can trade away Baez or Bryant because their stocks are just at an all-time low. The value for Baez from last year to this year is astonishing to see how far he's fallen. For Chris Bryant, the value's just never been so low. For maybe Anthony Rizzo, but you can't trade your captain. Wilson Contreras is the best player maybe on the Chicago Cubs right now and probably their best trade piece. And as much as I love Willie, as I have a personal relationship with him as well, I think that's our best bet to get anything. The farm system is depleted. Ed Howard is the only prospect who was drafted this year that looks like he can kind of carry the load at all. I mean, we traded. You got to look at the moves that Theo's made over the years. I mean, the one move that I hate the most because I feel like the best prospect the Cubs had was traded away for Aroldis Chapman in the Gleyber Torres deal. And I understand that move, and we all have to understand that move completely because of the fact that that move may have just brought us a World Series championship. Without Chapman, we don't win that World Series. I've said this numerous times on the podcast. We do not win the World Series without Chapman. But imagine if Gleyber Torres, who is an all-star, the next young stud for the New York Yankees, he's killing it right now. He just destroyed the Indians when the Yankees swept the Indians this week. If we had him on this team, an infield of Rizzo, Bryant, Torres, and Baez, like who knows what effect that would have on the team. Contreras in that mix, Kyle Schwarber. I think Kyle Schwarber is also a decently valuable trade piece that you can move for something. But for what? What is like? We just need new players. The core just didn't work, and that's the worst part of this. Our window seems to be closed, and that's so hard to swallow. That pill is so tough to swallow. Moving on, the White Sox, they were up 1-0. They won the first game against the Athletics, and then they lost the next two. They were up in Game 3. Manager Rick Renteria had some questionable moves, and the White Sox ended up losing that game 4-6. The core for the White Sox looks really good. The legit flip side to the Cubs is the White Sox right now. They have a young core. They're very reminiscent of the 2015 Cubs that kind of weren't expected to be there. They made noise in the first game. Even Luis Robert yesterday had a home run and an RBI double in the game to start out. The White Sox were up 2-0. And it kind of just feels like maybe inexperience played a key factor, a key role in that, and that's why they lost. But the A's have good pitching, so we'll see how that shakes out. I think the White Sox are very promising, but something to monitor over the offseason is the White Sox need a new manager, I think. I don't think Rick Renteria, much like the Cubs had Rick Renteria in 2014, I think the White Sox are looking for that manager that takes them over the top. And unfortunately, in both Chicago teams, Rick Renteria hasn't really been that guy. So we'll see what the White Sox do over the offseason. We'll keep a close eye on both the Cubs and the White Sox over the offseason because it is going to be an interesting offseason. There's going to be some tough decisions that David Ross, Theo Epstein, Jed Hoyer are going to have to make. And we'll see how David Ross does under this new regime because it's going to be a change. There has to be a change. There's no way you can trot the same lineup out there next year because there's nobody that's getting it done. There's nobody that's getting it done, and there's no spark plug. Maybe this was the Corona year that we have to take a little for granted. Maybe we have to take it with a little grain of salt. But you know what? Like, I don't feel like that. I feel like some guys did better. Jason Hayward, Ian Happ, they did better. So if we can, you know, factor that into maybe Baez coming back around next year, it's looking okay at best. it's not looking great. The bullpen, we have so many issues with the bullpen. Craig Kimbrel, you owe him so much money over the next 2 years. And he's just not been the guy you wanted. He's not been the guy you thought you were going to get. The bullpen needs help. And maybe Braylon Marquez can, you know, sprout into something great next year, but we'll see. Enough of the Cubs ranting. The Bears are 3-0, so let's get into some Bears talk. All right, this weekend, Nick Foles and the Chicago Bears are 3-0 heading into a matchup with the Indianapolis Colts in Chicago at noon on Sunday. Some of the key notes for this week and some of the keys to the game. The Bears need to establish a running game, first and foremost, 100%. As you saw last week, this Colts secondary feasted on Sam Darnold as they were down early and they had to throw early. If the Bears can establish a run with David Montgomery now that Tariq Cohen is out, David Montgomery will get more of the pass-catching work. David Montgomery will get more of the first, second, and third down handoffs. You'll have Cordarrelle Patterson in the backfield to kind of mix it up a bunch, but it'll be primarily David Montgomery as he is my player of the game. If David Montgomery gets going, then the Chicago Bears should be looking good on offense. Nick Foles, this should be a game where you ease Nick Foles into the game plan. I do not think you win this game through Nick Foles. If you have to do that, you're going to force yourself into mistakes. On the flip side of the ball, the secondary needs to win. The secondary needs to convert on Philip Rivers lollipop throws. I mean, Philip Rivers. This is Philip Rivers we're talking about. This is Jacoby Brissett. You don't have an athletic quarterback out there. Get pressure. The Bears will get pressure. The Colts have an outstanding offensive line, but the Bears have the big boys up front. Robert Quinn, Akeem Hicks, Khalil Mack. Big boys up front to get the pressure, take some of the edge off the secondary, but the secondary has to convert. The Bears secondary is notorious for dropping picks, especially in these key games, these trap games, if you will. In my eyes, this is a trap game. After an emotional, a stunning comeback last week, it's time for the Bears to not take their foot off the gas. We need to go full force into this game, and the defense needs to feast. Take the pressure off of Nick Foles with the running game and the defense, and give Nick Foles some time in the pocket to throw. Open up some play action so there'll be some guys open. Maybe get Anthony Miller involved. Allen Robinson should get his. But I'm looking for Nick Foles to get around 200, 250 yards. Nothing crazy. Maybe a little less than 25 attempts. Do it like the Browns are using Baker Mayfield this year. They're doing under 25 attempts. They're putting a lot of emphasis on the running game, averaging around 170, 180 yards per game. Take some of the pressure off Baker Mayfield so he only needs to throw 23, 24 times for only like 150 yards, 170 yards, a couple touchdowns, no mistakes. This is that. A little bit more for Nick Foles. Let's do around 25 times. Give him like 200, 250 yards through the air. No mistakes, no turnovers. And I think the Bears come out of this with a final score of 28-17. And then this game in the schedule for me, this game is so big because this will kind of take the Bears into momentum, a momentum swing against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, or it might take them away if they falter and lose this game. This is a key game because the matchup with the Colts is pretty good. I think the Bears and the Colts are kind of in that same tier in the NFL team's ranking. And I think it's important for the Bears to get on top of this. I think they can get on top of this, but let's see how Philip Rivers does against the Bears defense, because it should not be a good day for him at the office. I think this game also will take the Bears to their Thursday night matchup looking a lot better against the Buccaneers. A win here, confidence and morale, will help boost the Bears to a better opportunity and a shot at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Tom Brady. Elsewhere around the league, it's not that great of a schedule this week. You have the Cleveland Browns at the Cowboys. Baker Mayfield returning to his home state of Texas. Cowboys are a -4.5 favorite. And I think this will teach us a lot about the Cleveland Browns. I think they're a playoff team, but if they can stay in a shootout against the Dallas Cowboys, I think that'll help Baker Mayfield just keep elevating his confidence and increasing his morale. And maybe they can actually win this game because the Cowboys defense is bad. And the Cowboys offensive line with two starters out is kind of a liability right now. We'll see if the Browns can stop the running game with the offensive or with the defensive line. And Ezekiel Elliott, who is a monster, but who does Dak distribute the ball to this week? Last week it was Cedric Wilson and Michael Gallup. The week before it was CeeDee Lamb and Amari Cooper. So let's see where the ball goes. Maybe Dalton Schultz gets into the mix. By the way, if you're in fantasy, definitely pick up Dalton Schultz, or in daily fantasy. Dalton Schultz, a great play this week. Elsewhere, you have the Patriots and Chiefs. The Chiefs are favorites by a 7-point spread. I think the Chiefs will cover that, and I think they'll win this game easily. After seeing what the Chiefs did to the Ravens last year, I'm astonished, and I feel like there's no stopping them from repeating this year. I think maybe the Seahawks, like I picked the Seahawks and the Chiefs to be in the Super Bowl at the end of the year, but man, after seeing what Patrick Mahomes did to the quote-unquote most complete team in the league and the former reigning MVP Lamar Jackson, it's that man can do anything. That team can really do anything. I mean, they're as good of a football team, as good of an offense as I've ever seen, especially with Pat Mahomes running the helm. The rest of the week, it's not that great. You have the Eagles at 49ers. That's a Sunday night matchup, but obviously preseason without all the 49ers injuries, that looked a lot better on paper. The Falcons at Packers is going to be a good Monday night matchup, and the Packers are -7. I'm looking at them to cover as favorites. And Aaron Rodgers is just bossing the league right now. So far this year, the throws that he's made and the plays that he's made on the offensive line, especially pre-snap penalties for opposing teams, it's been incredible. They have drawn 5 opposing defenses offside and only have had 1 false start. And that's so interesting to think about, because all these teams, you see these new offensive linemen come in to kind of help out, and you see they're not really in rhythm. The Packers offensive linemen and their synchronization and connection with Aaron Rodgers, it's got to be marveled. I mean, if that's not such a great game plan and blueprint to a quarterback's success, then I don't know what is. Like, more important than even a quarterback's relationship with his receivers, I feel, is a quarterback's relationship with his offensive line. Because if a quarterback is comfortable and knows that his offensive line is going to protect him, it just makes him all the more confident to get the ball down the field. And that's what you're seeing with Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers. Year after year, they're so good, even without drafting any weapons for Aaron Rodgers in the first couple rounds. And, you know, you're looking at this week, Alan Lazard is out. So he's going to rely on Marquez Valdez-Scantling as maybe his number one, with Davante Adams still battling that hamstring injury. Other injuries of note, Michael Thomas is out. DeAndre Hopkins is a game-time decision, as he has not practiced today or yesterday. We're still waiting on the condition of Chris Carson, who's looked good, who's limited practice, but he's also a game-time decision. So for fantasy lineups, pick up your Carlos Hydes, pick up your Andy Isabella's, especially if DeAndre Hopkins is out, because as we saw last week against the Lions, Kyler Murray was throwing a lot to Andy Isabella, maybe establishing a rapport or connection there. We'll see how the leading receiver in the NFL, if he plays on Sunday, does, if DeAndre can get back into the game. Switching gears to the final part of the show, we'll talk about the NBA Finals. If you missed it, go to check out our first edition of 23 is the Take with our NBA experts, Zane Kazi and Usman Mahmoud. And one of the things that we talked about on that show was what the defense needs to do for the Miami Heat, especially in establishing that zone. And we saw that that did not work at all. The main takeaway from game one was that Bam Adebayo, Jimmy Butler, and Goran Dragic all got hurt. And Goran Dragic does not look to play for the rest of the series. Bam Adebayo looks to be out for game two. So this series is almost a wrap. There isn't much that the Miami Heat were able to do in terms of stopping AD. There wasn't much they could do in terms of stopping LeBron. And KCP looked good. Rajon Rondo looked good. I think the firepower just isn't going to do enough for the Miami Heat. Tyler Hero was held in check. He had -35 was his final stat line, and that is insane. The poor kid, 20 years old, that's not going to be good for his psyche. We'll see what happens the rest of the way, but it's not looking good for the Miami Heat. I think the Lakers are probably going to seal this thing in 4, to be honest, especially with the injuries and maybe Bam's out game 2, so who's going to guard AD? Who's going to guard LeBron, especially if they have to switch maybe Jimmy to AD, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think they're going to stick Myers Leonard on to AD, but then that completely frees up Dwight Howard. Rajon Rondo's also there. There's so many ways the Lakers can just knife their way into the championship with this. We also on that take had a, on 23's the take, had a good discussion about what this will do for LeBron's legacy and how LeBron would have fared if he were taken out by the Nuggets like Kawhi was. So definitely check that out. We'll have another one coming at you next week. Follow the podcast at 23 is the mic on Instagram and Twitter. We have a lot of new content coming out on the Instagram page. We'll be looking forward to see what the Bears do on Sunday. They're now the only Chicago team remaining in sports right now. And it's kind of sad to just see the White Sox and the Cubs exit so early. But let me guys know what your thoughts are on the Cubs exit. Like, where do you see them going from here? And what do you think they should do? Next week's Monday's show is also going to have our mailbag segment. If you want to submit a question or a comment or a thought, submit them on Instagram. You can DM our 23's the mic account, or you can hit us up on Twitter. It'll definitely be riveting. We've got some really good questions in already. Thanks to everyone who listened to today's episode. This is 23's the mic. Have a great weekend. Love you guys.